And what is up, everyone? This is the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper, joined by my right-hand man, like, because you're literally
to your right.
To my right, Chris Forsberg. What's up, Chris?
What's going down, Drapes? What's going down?
Here we are, week after the Celtics were eliminated or so, more than a week, I guess, now. How are you feeling, dude?
It didn't hit me until watching game one of that East Finals last night and seeing Toronto and Milwaukee out there and, Milwaukee coming back and Brooke Lopez having a big night and Toronto, Kawhi experiencing some of the same frustrations that maybe Kyrie did. And it hit me in the feels a little bit. I was like, it would have been nice to see the Celtics out there. And yet, they didn't deserve to be out there.
Right.
And
right.
So, I guess I'm still coming to grips with what's happened. But,
No, I'm watching, Bucks Raptors. And honestly, I'm thinking these were the two best teams.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Kyle Lowry was crazy last night. Obviously Kawhi's going to do his thing. But the Bucks, the contributions from guys other than Giannis. And so, I know Celtics fans are heartbroken that they lost in five, but like Brad said, they lost to a better team. The Bucks this year, this run, in this vacuum, they were a better team.
Who could have ever seen the Bucks coming?
You're still hanging on to that. But you were a regular season Bucks fan.
I was.
In the playoffs, backed off a little bit.
I did. You know what's funny? I picked the Celtics. You know what's funny? I don't want to divert too far off the topic here, but I picked the Celtics in seven in the series. After riding the Bucks wave the whole season by telling you how great they were, I picked the Celtics in seven, which made no sense because there was no way the Celtics were winning a game seven in Milwaukee. But then the Celtics won game one, and I remember we were filming something for Early Edition on a corner in Milwaukee. Me and Sherrod were outside. Yeah. I'm freezing. I go, I've never been less confident in this team. And I don't know why I felt that way.
Even after the win.
When Pierce was making his proclamation. And you know what? I think that's what it was. Pierce made his proclamation and it was like, this series over. And I was like, I don't know if it's over. It's like one game. And I just didn't feel good. I was like, people are going to get a little too fat and happy with this win. And that's what happened. But did I foresee four straight losses? No. But I sort of felt in that moment, I was like, I don't know if this is as good of a situation as people are making it out to be. And I should have never gotten off that Bucks bandwagon. Like Danny Ainge, like Brad Stevens, like Wick Grosbeck, I got overly caught up in the fact that the Celtics would find it.
Right. And it looked like they did in game one. We thought. And then games, two through five were completely different,
right,
which is crazy. But we don't need to rehash that.
That's a sore point
for Celtics fans and the organization. We understand that. We're going to get into the Celtics season coming up in a minute with Tom Haberstroh, NBC Sports National Basketball Insider. He's written some good stuff about the Celtics. But we got to dive into, I guess, the most timely thing that happened, mm-hmm. The NBA draft lottery. Depending on where you stand, it was either a good night for the Celtics.
We are on opposite ends of the spectrum.
I'm on the right end of the spectrum. You're on the wrong end. There's no opposite. There's a right or wrong. Let's break it down. So the Celtics got number 14, which,
that's where they were expected to be.
Right. But New Orleans number one, Memphis number two, Knicks number three, Lakers number four. Let's break it down. What kind of night was it for the Boston Celtics?
And this isn't a compliment. People thought got on me about this, but it could have been worse. That's not to say it was a great night. It was a good night. The Celtics avoided the what I thought was the two disaster scenarios, which was Philadelphia vaulting to one or the Knicks vaulting to number one. Because if that happens, then either Philadelphia's a wrecking ball in the East or the Knicks are going to just be forming their super team. And I thought, if they got number one, then the wheels would have started turning. You would have heard about how they were going to flip that to New Orleans for Anthony Davis. And then you would have heard, Kevin Durant's definitely coming. And then Kyrie was going to be right behind him. And boom, all of a sudden the Knicks got a super team. I think it's a lot more difficult now. So I think the Celtics keeping that Anthony Davis hope alive, that Memphis pick vaulting to number two, is on the surface, people say, that makes Memphis better here because they're going to get Ja Morant and start building. But I think it's going to take time. I think that pick is still going to be okay. And that was a really good thing to happen for the Celtics. Just feel like it could have been a lot worse. And so I'm not saying it's pop champagne and send off confetti. that didn't happen. But I think I was also very realistic that they had a 3.8% chance of vaulting from 14 to 2-3-4, and I so I never kind of expected that to happen. I sort of thought the more likely thing was that that Memphis pick was going to fall to 9, and so you would have been at 9, 14, 20, and 22,
yeah,
and I thought
that would
have been a disaster.
Yeah.
So I just feel like of the things that you were hopeful would happen, that you can take that away. And, you know, hindsight will ultimately dictate what does New Orleans do from here and how much are the Celtics involved in that Anthony Davis pursuit. That'll tell us whether Lotto Night was a success or not.
Well, I mean, this is how I saw it, and I agree with you. It could have been a lot worse. The Knicks get number one, Philly, even the Lakers get number one. But here's where it hurt the Celtics. A couple of reasons why. The number three pick that the Knicks have is still a valuable pick. And I think that pick becomes more valuable because the Pelicans got number one.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you imagine having the number one pick and the number three pick in this draft, which many believe was, all right, Zion clearly number one, but Ja Morant and RJ Barrett right there at two and three. A lot of people thought the top three picks, that's where the separation was after that. Then it would fall off. And so theoretically, if you're in New Orleans, you could have the number one and the number three. Obviously not as good as, you know, some of the other packages maybe. But then too, Chris, the Lakers. And I understand you hate all the Lakers players, not named LeBron. You devalue everybody on that roster.
I
understand
I
that. But the Lakers jumped up seven spots, so you cannot deny the fact that the Lakers, their package became stronger. Maybe not enough, probably not, but it became stronger than what it was the day before the draft lottery.
So a couple things at play here. Honestly, it all comes down to beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? What does David Griffin want? Now, if he says, I got this transformational superstar in Zion Williamson, I want to do everything from day one to keep him happy, then I do think there's some value to that third pick. Because if you can go get RJ Barrett, we know they're friendly now. Like, do you create this little, you know, do you ease it for Zion? Like, maybe that's a priority for them.
Right.
And so, like, that maybe makes the Knicks package a little bit better than it seems on the surface. But I'm not sold on anything else they can put into that. Like, Kevin Knox, terrible rookie season, like way below what people thought.
Everybody's terrible in the Knicks uniform.
Well,
though.
But true,
I mean,
that is true. But
it's all about situation.
Mitchell
and fit,
Robinson
though.
Is a very nice prospect. You can
Mitchell
sell me
Robinson
on that.
Is he did have a good rookie. I will say that. All
and
right.
Then you know, will the, how much of that Dallas package that they got for Kristaps Porzingis would they be willing to throw in?
Dennis Smith.
They just don't do a lot for me. Like,
dude, see, this is the problem, Chris. You overvalue our local guys, and then you devalue everybody else.
So, okay,
you're poo-pooing the Lakers
there.
Package. You're poo-pooing the Knicks package.
Is there
any package out there that, you know, outside of the Celtics?
Absolutely. If the Raptors came to the table with Pascal Siakam and like whatever filler else that they would need to do it.
Can you imagine that? Why you gotta throw the Raptors into the mix, dude?
Like the Clippers, if they could come up with Shea and Harris and, like, there's teams out there that are not in the mix right now that are going to appear this summer, and I think which is all the more reason that all three of these teams, the Celtics, Lakers, and Knicks, need to pounce early because they need to make David Griffin think, like, we need to make this deal, because the longer it goes, the more other teams are going to start thinking. Like, say Toronto gets bounced right now, and they realize, like, they had a very good season, but they're just not there yet. Like, they're not on the Bucks level. They need another piece. Like, they've already shown they're fearless.
If they get Kawhi to re-sign
and go
and
get
Anthony Davis, ooh.
Like
I think
Siakam's going to be great,
right.
But I think we also saw in Game 7 of that series against Philadelphia, like, he's just not on that level yet. So, you know, and this is what I go back to with the Celtics guys as well. Like, I think really highly of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I do think that of the Knicks and Lakers packages, I do think they are better long-term prospects than the other guys involved. Like, and that's not to diminish Brandon Ingram's going to be very good, and, like, there is that little bit of a health scare. Lonzo Ball as well, like, he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. I just think the Celtics are more known commodities right now, and I think they still have the best blend of packages of people. And people want to say, well, you know, that Grizzlies pick isn't as good because, you know, by 2 years from now, maybe Morant and Jackson can turn them around and maybe they'll be better. But, you know, what we just saw in this lottery is, who knows? Like, you don't have to be the worst team anymore to win the lottery.
Right.
These smooth odds,
sure.
You know, like, just being in that mix and being an unprotected pick is so valuable at this point. So I do think the Celtics have the assets that will make David Griffin think, but I just think it comes down to what does he want? Like, who does he think pairs best? Or is he I think some of this is a bluff in terms of them saying they want AD back. Like, I do believe they think that, but I just don't think they in the hearts think it's a reality. I think they have to say it so that everybody else brings their best offer to the table. But like, if you could convince him to stay, then that...
Right. But aren't they more in a position now to, like, from a you know, trying to entice AD to stay? They're in a better position now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how Anthony Davis feels about Zion. He may not care one bit about Zion, or he may love him. I don't know. But you got to figure... The Pelicans are in a stronger position to convince AD to stay than they were before lottery night.
That AD came out within like 30 seconds of the lottery.
I'm not buying that, though. What is he going to say? What is he supposed to
say? Oh, I don't know. Like,
I'm not buying Shams' report and some of them reports
out
there.
Rich Paul was on the phone real quick to let everybody know that
But as soon as Zion sides with Rich Paul, you know, it's all in the family. You know, everybody's happy, you know. Think about it. I don't know how much Anthony Davis is orchestrating this versus, let's say, Rich Paul. Yeah.
No, that's fair. And that's fair. Like, I think Anthony Davis was partly a pawn in all this. It was, you know, certainly he wanted out, but did he want it as badly as Rich Paul wanted to get him to LeBron? I don't know about that for sure. It will be fascinating. But, like, from a Celtics perspective, let's drill this down.
Drill it down.
Like, so it's going to take a ransom.
Yeah.
And so I've been of the ilk that it is going to take Tatum, Brown, Smart, and draft picks to get David Griffin to make that trade. And so I'll throw it on you. Do you make that trade? Say David Griffin likes that package.
And you have Kyrie coming back.
And I think that you have to assume that, because I don't know if you make that move. I think it's too risky without Kyrie's commitment.
Yeah, without Kyrie back. Yes, I make that move, because I believe that you do need superstars. I'd rather have Kyrie back with another superstar in Anthony Davis than Kyrie back with the same crew and going through the same rigmarole. I think, you know, and you get the stars and you fill out the rest of the roster later. And so if you can pull Anthony Davis, I'm cool with him and Kyrie being the 1-2 punch.
And this is what I think people forget. They're like, well, I don't think, I'm not throwing it on you. Like, but I hear people say, well, how do you fill out the roster? You'd still have Al Horford, you still have Gordon Hayward. You could re-sign Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier. Like, there's no shortage of bodies that you could fill out this roster with, and you'd have two of the top 15 guys in the NBA, maybe like one of the top three players in the NBA. I think people forget how damn good Anthony Davis was. He was like the best player in basketball 2 years ago, and I know last year was bad. Like, it was bad for the way he handled it. It was bad because, you know, he wasn't on the court and couldn't show what he could do. That sours us on it, but we have such a recency bias. And I think this is what has stunned me about this offseason is from the jump, people are like, we don't want Kyrie back. And I'm thinking, do you understand, like, how detrimental to your team that would be if you just let it all...
But hold on, Chris. I think people, and there are some people that say they don't want Kyrie back no matter what. But if you don't get Anthony Davis, do you want Kyrie back?
Yes.
And let's say you do get him back. I guess one thing you could do is trade him at the deadline.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You know, you could get a hefty package for him at the deadline if it's not working out.
And that, to me, is what you have to do is just... Okay, I get the notion of that maybe he's not the guy for you, that maybe he's just not the way that this thing works best, that Brad Stevens can't get the most out of him, that he doesn't bring the best out of his teammates around him. But I think you have to give it another chance to see if that works. Regardless of ADs here, regardless of how this roster looks, you have to try to back out, because 2 years ago it worked. And so you got to give it another shot. And if you get to February and it's not working and you're just like, all right, it didn't work. Okay, fine. Cut bait at that point. Maybe Kyrie will want out at that point. But if he's willing to come back, you have to give him that max contract and you have to be willing to try and see this thing through.
I'm under the understanding you can't just let an asset walk out the door for nothing. I got you on that. But really, the Celtics have no choice. They have no say in the matter, really.
Right.
It really is up to Kyrie. The Celtics are going to make the offer. We know that. Exactly. They're going to make the max offer. The question is, what does Kyrie want? And nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
I don't even know if Kyrie fully knows.
No. Two people know. Well, I mean, if
Kyrie knows, right? Yeah.
Then his father, who's you know, he's obviously like confident, and Robin Pound,
his guy,
his trainer, who's like the only two people on earth who he seems to confide in and have an idea. That's why, you know, when you hear Wick on the radio saying, you know, don't believe the reports that are out there, I kind of like agree with Wick. I think a lot of what's out there now is just speculation, and maybe it's Rich Paul calling.
But he did look miserable, though. He looked miserable
two seasons ago. Like, I just think that's part of the package with Kyrie, is that he was frustrated and we're left to judge body language. But I also think that, you know, what we've learned from Kyrie is, like, he doesn't want people to speculate about his future. He doesn't want to speculate, because, like, whenever you think he's going to zig, he's going to zag. Right. So, like, listen, I can't sit here and tell you I know what's going to happen this summer. I have no clue, and nothing would surprise me at this point. But I just think when he sits down, and some of it will be dictated by how the Davis situation plays out, by what Kevin Durant decides to do. But I think at the end of the day, Kyrie Irving is going to look at the situation he has. He's going to understand that changes are coming. And he's going to say, well, you know, I have a pretty good thing in Boston. Right. Maybe I need to see this through. You know, and for his legacy, for, you know, how we view him as a leader, I think it's maybe important that he comes back here and figures this thing out. But the Celtics certainly can give him more motivation by what they do with the roster before July 1.
Yeah, and before we get to Tom Haberstroh, we got to talk quickly about Terry Rozier. I mean, this dude's throwing darts on his way out of town. He was on
ESPN. He might not be on his way out of town.
Anything is possible, right? Remember, Marcus Smart had some comments at the end of last year, and people were thinking, you know what, he's gone. And then, you know, everybody calmed down, cooler heads prevailed, and then he came back. But he was on ESPN, did the car wash, and he had some strong comments about his future in Boston, what went down this season. Terry Rozier clearly unhappy with this last season with the Celtics.
But we all knew that. And that's what got, you know, I understand Terry's frustrations. I think everybody understands Terry's frustrations. He didn't need to go on First Take and voice those, especially so soon after the season. There's 14 other guys in that locker room that were frustrated, and none of them rushed to tell Stephen A. Smith how mad they were. And I just think Terry probably got some bad advice. Like, I understand, like, you're about to be a free agent, and so you want your name out there. You want people to remind people why you had a bad season. So I think his agent says, hey, Terry, why don't you, you know, go down to Bristol, get on some shows, drum up a little hype. But I think ultimately, if I'm an NBA general manager, again, I'm sitting there and I say, I know why it didn't work for Terry Rozier this year. And now I'm left questioning what his desires are, what makes him tick. Is he about himself and that next payday, or is he about the team winning? Because if he was about the team winning, and if he had sacrificed this year, he wouldn't have to worry about his payday this summer. It would have come. And so, as much as I love Terry, and maybe I'm just mad because he didn't use those quotes on Celtics post up, like, I just think he went about this the wrong way. I just think, like, I don't know what good comes out of this.
But hold on, maybe he went about it the wrong way, but I'm not worried about Terry in the court of public opinion. I'm worried about the words that came out of the man's mouth, Chris Forsberg. And so, you know, the fact
What worried
that,
you then?
No.
What didn't you know?
No. I pretty much knew. I didn't know how, you know, I guess how forthcoming he was about not wanting to be back in the current situation.
But in the same way that we talk about Rich Paul, I think that's posturing. That's like, he said multiple times now, like, the whole no comment about whether he wanted the Celtics to match. He's just trying to say, like, he wants a different situation because he, like, this year sucked. But if Kyrie leaves, if Marcus Smart gets traded, like, Terry Rozier is your starting point guard. He gets what he always wanted.
What about Ricky Rubio? What are you talking about? What about Ricky Rubio?
I can't believe we're this either. Did you see what Ricky Rubio said? Ricky Rubio literally said there's 30 teams in the league that I could play for. And he just referenced the Celtics, and all of a sudden people are like, Ricky Rubio wants to play for the Celtics.
Right?
This is why I hate the offseason. Like, everything is swooped up. But, I mean, for me, the Rozier stuff isn't frustrating from what he said. It's the approach. And I just don't think it benefited him. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe like, hey, we hear today the Bulls love him, and so maybe they're just going to throw a bunch of money at him.
The Bulls, maybe, yeah. That could be an option. The Knicks, if they strike out on Kyrie.
Right. Phoenix always seems to come up.
You know, they're in the market for a point guard. All right, let's get Tom Haberstroh on the phone here to delve into Terry Rozier, Kyrie, the Celtics season, and much more. Tom Haberstroh joining the Celtics Talk podcast. Tom Haberstroh, great work always on the My Teams app and NBC Sports and, of course, NBCSportsBoston.com. Tom, let's get right into it because Chris and I have been debating lottery night and what it actually meant for the Celtics. How did you read what happened Tuesday, the way the ping pong balls bounced?
Well, I think it's a win for the Boston Celtics, even though they didn't get into the top four. I think when you look at the trade packages, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, no. I'm clapping because you're agreeing with me.
Oh, well, I think Chris already told me before that I have to agree with him before the pod started.
This is true.
Oh, is that what it was? All right.
So I'm sorry about that. You weren't supposed to laugh at that, Chris. Now our cover's blown. Yeah. So this obviously for the Celtics, a lot of people say, oh, well, this wasn't a good night because they didn't get into the top four. They didn't get into, you know, get the, you know, this, the slot that they wanted. But I think when you look at the rest of the league, who has a better trade package than Boston? Do they have a better package than centered around Jason Tatum, who just turned 21 years old? And we know what he can do in the playoffs. Obviously this year was not a good step forward for him, but I don't think like Kyle Kuzma is a really good young player, but he's 2 years older than Jason Tatum. And Tatum's still younger than a lot of the top prospects in this actual draft this year. So you look at DeAndre Hunter, Cam Johnson, Brandon Clark, you know, these guys are all older than Jason Tatum. So I think as a foundational piece in a trade package, I still think Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are better than what you're going to see in New York and in LA. And by the way, New York getting the third pick is great, but it's certainly not the ideal situation for the Knicks. Obviously you see their fan bases will agree with that, but if they got the number one or the number two pick, I think that's a terrible situation for the Boston Celtics. I still think they have the better trade package out of draft lottery night.
Tom, who do you think has the better package of the Knicks and the Lakers?
That's a great question. It kind of depends on what you feel about Dennis Smith, on Mitchell Robinson, who is sensational in his short time with the Knicks last year, just kind of came on at the late end of the season, one of the most productive bigs among the rookie class. And then Kevin Knox, I'm not a huge fan of his game. I think his best attribute is that he's young. I don't know if he's got a future all-star in him, but I do think that the Lakers probably have the best package. A word about Brandon Ingram. You know, I talked to Chris Bosch in a sit down a couple months ago, and everyone looks at Chris Bosch and says, man, that's Brandon Ingram's situation, right? It's not. The blood clot that Brandon Ingram had is a structural issue with his bone structure. It has nothing to do with the actual blood clots around his body. It was limited to his shoulder, not necessarily coming from his calf like Chris Bosch and then moving up into his lungs like Chris Bosch. So those are two separate scenarios. But still, with Kyle Kuzma's age, Brandon Ingram's game, I'm not the biggest fan of Brandon Ingram's game, bigger fan of Jason Tatum. So I think of the three, I would probably go Boston, then the Lakers, and then the New York Knicks.
What about wild cards? I've said what if Toronto comes out of the clouds with Siakam or, you know, like, I just feel like there's going to be teams out there that will muscle into the mix, and which is, to me, is why, like, Boston needs to strike quick here and try and get this thing done, especially in advance of draft night.
Yeah, as I wrote this week, I think the Clippers are a sneaky team with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think when you look at David Griffin, the GM of the Pelicans, I think Shai would give him such a good backcourt there with Jrue Holiday, just a really defensive-minded, strong leadership with Jrue Holiday there. That would be an amazing backcourt. And then you have Montrezl Harrell. I think Griff, a guy who's really valuing culture and leadership and wants to start a new era there in New Orleans. I think that's another strong voice in that locker room. If they wanted to target those two guys, the unprotected 2021 Miami Heat first round pick also is very appealing. So I think the Clippers are the sneaky team. Toronto can get into the mix. Let's see what happens with their playoff run. But I think the Clippers are the sneaky team in this race.
No, I know. I'm listening to you guys, and Drake's, I like Shai Gilgeous-Alex. No, I'm not mad. I'm more of a realist here, Tom Haberstroh. And here's why. The Clippers pick, I understand the unprotected Miami pick. That's great. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, nice player. Montrez, nice player. But we're talking about superstar potential, all-star caliber potential. I think when you look at some of the packages out there, the Knicks, with that number three pick, R.J. Barrett, who was arguably the number one high school player a year ago. Also, I'm not going to give up on Kevin Knox just yet because, Tom, I feel like system and organization dictates a lot about these players. And so if Kevin Knox goes to San Antonio, let's say, he's a better player than he was in New York. And so
you could say that about every player, right?
Right, exactly. You could say that. So I'm not going to, you know, shut down the Knicks package. And I agree, if they got the number one, it's more of a slam dunk. The Lakers package, I actually like the Lakers package. You know, Kuzma, 2 years older than Tatum, but you could argue Kuzma has had a better start statistically to his career than Jason Tatum. A sleeper team to me also might be Portland. Do you see Portland swinging for the fences at all? They got some young bigs they could trade. You know, for some reason, people want to trade CJ McCollum. His name is always thrown out there. What do you think about Portland also?
You know, I think if they had a really tough postseason like the previous two, yeah, I think that's a possibility. But I just think with this core and with Nurk getting injured, I think that actually means that they're going to bring everybody back. And I don't think they're going to blow it up, especially because are they confident that they can re-sign Anthony Davis? That's the big variable for all these teams is, are you going to give up the farm for Anthony Davis when you don't even know if he's going to stay long term? And of course, Portland would want a commitment from Anthony Davis before they give up those kinds of assets. But I'll say this, I'm not as big on RJ Barrett as everybody else is. I look at a guy who's a high volume shooter, but he's not efficient. I get very nervous when you get a guy who's trying to live at the line, but he's a 66% free throw shooter and he's an inefficient 3-point shooter. I know that he gets to the rack and he's a distributor. But I didn't love what I saw from him in the tournament. And his numbers suggest that this is not nearly as efficient as you want from a high volume scorer. In that system at Duke, I know he didn't have shooters around him, but Zion Williamson did pretty good without that. So I think the Knicks package with RJ Barrett is appealing from the standpoint of you can reunite RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson and start fresh from there. But I don't know. I think Jason Tatum has shown me more, not just in the regular season, but in the playoff stage as young as he was 2 years ago. If you get him away from Kyrie Irving and away from that stage in Boston and you just start from scratch with Zion Williamson, man, I think that's the best package.
All right, let's give Tom an easy one. That was tough, like trying to pick out what is Kyrie going to do this offseason?
Do you guys have any clue?
This is an easy one, right?
We've been saying, I don't know if Kyrie knows, so like, how are we supposed to know?
No, you know what I think, though, is that this time, this space for everyone to decompress is going to be a good thing. Not just for Kyrie, but I think for the Celtics, too. I think cooler heads will prevail, and I think they will come together this summer and come on a contract deal, just because I think – you know, Kyrie might look at all the situations around the league. Maybe if the Knicks get Zion, that's more appealing. Does he want to play next to RJ Barrett there in New York? Maybe they swing a deal for Anthony Davis. Maybe they don't. There's just so many variables right now. And we don't even know what happens in the playoff races, how much that's going to change things. Like Kevin Durant, does he come back this postseason? If he does it make the Warriors better, or is it going to be a total collapse here in the Western Conference Finals and Finals? What happens with Kawhi Leonard? What happens with Chris Middleton? There's so many variables that we just don't know right now. And I feel like if you've ever played spades, it's kind of like before you make your bids, you're looking around, you're like, you're trying to see what everyone else is doing first before you make your move. And I think that's what you're going to have with Kyrie, is like, he's going to wait around and see like who's going to land where before he makes his decision. But honestly, I just can't imagine there's any better situation for him than in Boston when they can bring in Anthony Davis. We know that he's not the best number one, Kyrie Irving, but if he's an amazing number two. And I think if they bring in Anthony Davis in Boston with Gordon Hayward there, that is an amazing core to win long term. And I don't know if he's going to get a better situation than that.
But Tom, what about the Knicks? Because, you know, you listen to Stephen A. Smith and some of these guys out here, 95% KD and Kyrie to the Knicks. To me, Kyrie's future in Boston, is as crazy as it sounds, depends on what happens with KD. So if KD does resign with the Warriors, obviously that's great news for the Celtics. But if KD does decide to go to New York, if I'm the Celtics, I'm worried. I'm nervous.
If KD and Kyrie want to go to New York together, more power to them.
Honestly, good luck to the New York media.
It's not just the New York media. It's just, building from scratch And people don't give the Celtics and the Miami Heat enough credit here, because when they built their big threes, they had Paul Pierce in Boston. They had Dwayne Wade in Miami, and they could create a culture building off of that. And I think LeBron has talked about it. I think other stars understand the value of having not to build from scratch and create something out of nothing. Look, Kevin Durant went to Golden State because of the culture there, because of the star power, of course, playing with Steph, but because of the culture. What's the culture there in New York? You know, I love David Fizdale. He's a great coach, but we don't know what it's going to be like, you know, when he gets the superstars in there, in that media, in that environment. So I just get, you know, if they want to build from scratch and create something in New York City, other people have tried that before. It hasn't worked out. More power to them if they want to do that.
All right, Tom, let's get you out of here on this. Let's say Kyrie, whether it's New York, whether he picks some random wild card, but he's just not back in Boston. Like, what do you think is the right way forward from the Celtics from there? Do they just run it back with the young core? Do they start looking around and try and figure out, like, is Brad Beal available? Like who's the next level star? What could they do if it doesn't work out with Kyrie?
You know, I think they're just going to have to build around Gordon Hayward and the young core there. They tried Scary Terry to try to bring him back. And I think, you know, try to rally around that young core and try to relive the 2018 playoffs again. You know, I think the tough thing is Gordon Hayward. That's the big question mark with the Boston Celtics, is what can they expect from him long term? Is he going to be just a super sub guy off the bench, or is he going to be the part of a big three? And that's really a tough question when you're paying him that kind of money, over $30 million over the next two seasons. You got to get, you know, star level performance out of Gordon Hayward. And maybe without Kyrie Irving and the expectations of being a championship contender, maybe Gordon Hayward feels a little bit of a, you know, relaxed, and ease of the burden on his shoulders. And maybe he plays a little bit more aggressively, but man, that was not a great, first season after the injury for Gordon Hayward, and they need to get more out of him. Without Kyrie, maybe he improves a lot better, but man, they just need something. They need, that is the big underreported story of this postseason, is what happened to Gordon Hayward.
No, and I think that's a big part of the Celtics going forward. You know, if he's back to form, that changes everything. All right, Tom Haberstroh, good stuff, man. Check him out on the My Teams app, NBCSports.com, NBCSportsBoston.com. Tom, thanks for coming on the Celtics Talk podcast.
You got it. And Chris, don't laugh next time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to blow our cover. Hey, we need to get Tom on our Celtics post-up program.
No, he's going to be on, dude. Come on, man.
That's how you promote.
Is that what you do? I'm a novice when it comes to those things. All right, Haberstroh. Thanks, man.
All right, Tom. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Later.
All right, great stuff from Tom Haberstroh, even though he agrees with you, Forsberg. I'm not going to hold that
against
him.
I sent him all the notes. I was like, here's every point I'm going to make today.
Just
please
nod
agree.
Your head and say yes. Just agree. you know what? You brought up Celtics Post Up. To me, and I'll say this on Drape's Takes on Celtics Post Up, this is the most important offseason for Danny Ainge since 2007. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand 2017 was great, getting Kyrie, getting Gordon Hayward. But this is the offseason that will shape this franchise for the next 5 years to come, Forsberg.
Yeah.
At least.
There's no denying it. Like, I think the league as a whole is never going to see an offseason like this. It's going to be fascinating to watch how it all plays out. And it's not like there's one definitive domino that first thing to fall. Because, like, if Kyrie just digs in and says, you know, I kind of want to explore my options, like, the rest of the league is just going to be in a holding pattern. And I don't know if he's the domino or if it's Durant or like how it all plays out, but there's just going to be so much up in the air and teams are going to get antsy because they're not going to want to be left holding the bag. Like, you know, it'll be fascinating to see how this all plays out. But certainly from a Celtics perspective, they have some very tough decisions about how to move forward. And it would be a lot easier if Kyrie was singing the same tune from the preseason where he was like, you know, I want to be back. Like, you could just roadmap your offseason so much easier. You'd know if you could be aggressive in the Anthony Davis pursuit. Like, what if they go all in on Anthony Davis and then Kyrie's like, yeah, I'm not coming back. Then do they have to pull? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a lot of ways this could go.
I don't envy the position they're in. And yet, you know, sort of like to bring this full circle, it's like the lottery. They could be in a lot worse position. It's like they have assets. Like, no matter how this plays out, you feel like there is a path back to being competitive. I just think there's a plan A, and it probably drops off to plan C or D based on, you know, what Kyrie decides, what how much you're willing to go after AD. But certainly, like, this will dictate how the next could be the next decade, you know, like it could be even longer just based on what they do. Do they go short window? Do they go long window? Yeah. I mean, man, a lot of decisions to come.
All right. It should be a fun offseason for the Celtics. Of course, we'll have you covered right here on the Celtics Talk podcast and each week, of course, on Celtics Post Up as well. Shout out again to Tom Haberstroh for jumping on
great
the podcast
opinions.
Tom is great. Even though I disagree with him most of the time, he has great stuff. Forsberg, good stuff as always. We'll catch you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.
Whee!